Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The budget process at the State House continues with a lot less money, apparently. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us, Ohio State House reporter for Gatehouse Media, Mark Kovac. Mark, welcome back.
Good morning.
Also, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer, Chrissy Thompson. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
Mark, you are, like most of the State House press corps, recently wrote about this two-year state budget. Much of what we've heard about it up to this point, you said we can just forget.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's especially true, I guess, this year with the governor's tax reform plan and some of the other things he's put into his executive budget, which he released back at the end of January. Republican legislative leaders have said all along they're not supporting some of the things like frack tax increase and sales tax increases, those kind of things. And so, I mean, we're all just kind of waiting around for the House to come out with its version of the budget. It feels a little later than usual for that. But I think come next week, we should see a sub bill from the House with their amendments and their changes. And it's a complicated picture because the governor and his administration since late last year has been telling us that revenues are tight. They're not coming in where they expected them to be. And so don't expect a whole lot of increased spending or any increased spending, really.
Right.
Going into the next budget
cycle. It was
going
to be kind of flat was sort of the worst of it. They were talking about a couple hundred million coming in low, but
the governor, the way he phrased it was, we're not cutting, we're taking taking back some of the increase.
Yeah, yeah. Increases over the years. So you might be going back to a level that you saw a few years ago, but which is a cut.
And that's what that's kind of the line that you keep hearing. It's like, look, these past 6 years, we've done the right things. Revenues are up. We've increased spending. We've put money in the rainy day fund. And now it's time for the agencies to really, you know, maybe be a little more restrained in their spending this time around. And so we're not, and that's kind of their theme. We're not cutting, you know, away. We're just cutting that increase, but they're still going to get more than they got before we came into office.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Well, good for them. What is really going to happen?
What's going to happen is that they have to find a place to cut this money from. And what does the state fund? Most of its budget goes to schools, healthcare for low-income people and children through Medicaid, and then state universities, the state prison system. By the time you get to the end of that, you're in single digits of the percentage of this 62 some, it won't be that high this year, but some million dollar, a billion dollar 2 year budget that is left to play with. And so they're cutting a couple, I guess it's 800 million out of, so it's a couple percentage points, not a lot, but there's not a lot to play with in the first place. And so the question is, like, are we, Kasich wants them to cut money to schools that are not growing. Lawmakers kind of have kind of scoffed at that, like, no way, we're not cutting money to our schools, but something's got to give. So that's really what we're looking at here. And that's why you hear lawmakers complaining so much about Medicaid expansion, because they'd really love to cut money out of that.
Yeah.
But it's not really an option right now.
I was going to say, it's an interesting place where we are right now, because we had this press conference last week with the governor and the Senate president and the House speaker announcing that, okay, we've got to cut this $800 million, $400 million over two fiscal years, each fiscal year. Mm-hmm. Usually, come about June, you know, we have a little adjustment in the numbers during the budget process. And usually those kind of adjustments go up. And so in June, the budget director will come in and say, hey, revenues are a little ahead of where we thought they'd be, and lawmakers have a little more money to play with, and increase schools funding and those kind of things. But now we're jumping in April to say, hey, you got to cut $800 million. And who knows what happens by the time June gets here? Because as of right now, I think for the fiscal year, we're off something like 600 and some million on tax revenues from where mm-hmm. they projected they were going to be. And I mean, who knows? I mean, if that trend continues, maybe we'll get to June and they'll lower it even more.
It definitely could happen. I mean, I think the big problem is that we still don't really know why this is happening.
Exactly. You took the words right out of it. I mean, that ultimately is the big problem. They don't know what to tweak going forward. So, they're certainly not going to raise taxes given their history and their promises over time.
I don't think so. They could raise the sales tax a little bit. Our sales tax revenues are going up. So, and they've done that before. So first of all, Kasich proposed a very, very small, like teeny tiny income tax cut. I can't see that happening right now. And lawmakers have basically acknowledged that they may not do it. Okay. So taxes, assume they just stay the same. Because we have Republicans, they don't like to raise taxes.
Right.
The issue right now is that this is kind of wonky. But so Kasich has been warning of a recession. His budget director said last week, guys, we're not in a recession. But our income tax revenues are below what we thought they would be. Now, there are a lot of reasons that that could be. They say it's not because they say it's not because they cut these business taxes over the last couple of years. They say that that's hitting all their projections. It's true, though, that folks are not hiring and spending as much as they thought they would in the economic environment we have. So we have a lot of uncertainty right now. But that's the only real reason that we're able to pin any of the economic folks down on.
Why are they having a hard time figuring out why this is happening?
Well, the governor will say, you know, we're up 400 whatever thousand jobs. We're obviously creating jobs, but those jobs aren't bringing in the type of income tax that we thought they would be. So I assume that means they're lower paying jobs. The other issue is the sales tax. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard the governor say, you go to the store, you're not paying full price anymore. You're paying 40% off the full price or whatever. So nobody's paying.
Yeah. So prices are lower just generally across the board. And so if the taxes is a percentage of your grocery bill, not your grocery, but your Target bill, your Target bill is lower.
Groceries,
which is
of course,
great
are
for
not
you,
taxed,
bad for
right.
the state. So, another thing that they have, it's funny, though, because they say that wages, it's not because of wages. But we all know that wages in Ohio are lower
even though
growing.
They've rebounded on the unemployment thing, what the jobs they have pay less.
That's right. We are underperforming other states as far as what the average wage of our workers is. We also have folks, unemployment is low, but we have folks who've dropped out of the labor market over the years, I'm just throwing these out there because these are facts that we know. When you ask, and I was not at this specific meeting, but a lot of folks asked Tim Keene, lawmakers did actually, and he's the state budget director, a couple of weeks ago, like, okay, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? They asked him about wages. They asked him about the labor force, et cetera. And he kept saying, no, no, no. But it does sound like it is a combination of these factors and that they projected that things would be better than they are. So the message from them is that we're not in a recession, but just things are slow. And that could mean hardships for some of our schools or less money to doctors who do Medicaid work or things like that.
I mean, their other part of their message is, you know, we're not alone in this. There's 2/3 of the other states out there that are in the same budget time, facing the same kind of budget crunches. It's a national thing that's going on. That's what they keep coming back to.
The national economy is slow. That's fair. I also find it kind of amusing that they keep bringing up these other states, because I remember a couple of years ago when Kasich was first running for president in 2015, I would get the very same emails from his staff saying, look how Ohio has no budget troubles and 26 other states have budget troubles. So now we are saying that we're actually in the same boat as these other states. So, you know, it evened up eventually.
Ohio is often compared to Kansas in this regard in terms of the tax cuts.
I don't think that's fair, though. Kansas eliminated their income tax for businesses, and we just eliminated it on the first $250,000 in profit.
Which is actually a lot of people, though, isn't it?
Well, so here's the thing. We do, I'm not going to be able to pull these numbers off the top of my head. They have been in past stories I've written, but we do know that most, I think it's like 80% of people who have, like, it's a small business or set up that way, even if it's a big business. So mm-hmm. you particularly own it. It's called an S corp or something like that. Sole proprietorships.
Yeah.
80% of those folks don't make a profit, so they don't pay any taxes. So most of the folks that we're getting income tax revenue from in that category, we're making quite a bit of money anyway. And so, yes, it cuts a small percentage of the income tax we would have gotten from those folks, but not as much as you would think, because we actually have a lot of big businesses that are sole proprietorships bringing in that money.
Loretta in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
We do need money. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've been led down the road to believe that because the jobs that have been created would cure our problems. But I'm looking at the tax cuts that go to the 1%. You know, ever since Reagan, I cannot remember a year where the 1% have gone without a tax cut. And we should not be in the business of making the rich richer and the poor poorer.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, Mark Kovac, you're saying it's Republican legislature. They're not in the business of raising taxes for sure.
They aren't. I mean, I talked to Senate President Larry Obhoff last week, and he said point blank, I'm not going to raise taxes. But you have this whole net tax thing going on. I mean, I find it hard to believe that the Republicans won't come up with some kind of little tiny income tax cut.
Revenue enhancements.
Yeah, somehow. Somehow. I mean, if that means, you know.
George Voinovich first.
You know, okay, we'll increase the cigarette tax, you know, or maybe we'll equalize the other tobacco tax and the vaping tax. I mean, I have a hard time believing they're not going to do something with tax policy that, that they can come out and say, you know, as the caller is saying here, that, oh, we're going to cut your taxes again, because the governor hits on that all the time. You know, I mean, he talked during this press conference last week about being on the phone with a business from Connecticut, and the business from Connecticut is looking at a couple states to move to, but not Ohio, because Ohio has an income tax and the other states don't have an income tax. And so, I mean, he keeps hitting on the fact that we got to get this income tax down even lower, you know, in order to attract business and, you know, boost our economy. But you're going to hear those kinds of comments. I mean, you're already hearing them from Democrats. You were hearing them before that we've had these tax cuts for how many years now, when we're not seeing the kind of growth that they promised we would get.
And how many companies want to move to Ohio? There's the other side of that coin, where the governor's proposing, you know, shutting down the Bureau of Children with Medical Handicaps program, where schools are flat funded for years on end, even though the requirements keep increasing. I mean, does anyone ever look at that other side of the coin?
Yeah.
Do companies want to move to a state that's flailing financially?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if we're flailing. I wouldn't.
Well,
I think, though, that it's true that companies, I've written stories on this in the past, because Kasich often talks about income tax cuts being the number one thing that you can do to attract folks to Ohio. And people who deal with what's called site selection, like they're consultants that help companies pick places to put often manufacturing or logistics facilities, which those are good paying working class jobs. We need, you know, that fits our population here in Ohio. So those folks look for, number one, they look for a well-trained workforce. That comes through education. You know, number two, they look for infrastructure. So that's really good roads, connections to really good airports, safe bridges, good rail, that kind of thing. That's stuff that the state pays for, you know. So a lot of folks, you know, if you talk to kind of these medium-sized business owners, they talk about how they wanted to be in this suburb of Cincinnati because it had really good schools and, you know, great parks, and their commute time was really low, and their employees could, you know, join the gym in this town for free type of – I mean, like I'm speaking specifically of Blue Ash here, but I wrote a story a couple years ago where a guy was like, yeah, I mean, I guess I care about the income tax, but Blue Ash is a great town, and I'm able to recruit people to Blue Ash. Like, it's awesome. So, you know, you're totally right. It's not just – this is Kasich's favorite thing, but it's not the only thing people look at. And if we stop spending money on stuff in the state, then yeah, we become much less attractive. So.
Yeah, and the administration isn't saying that we're flailing. I mean, when you go back to the point where we started, they're still saying, look, we're spending more, you know, and doing better at it, I guess, than we were when we took office, when my predecessor was in office. I mean, that's what the governor will say. So it's not like we're going out and slashing stuff right now. We're cutting away from that increase in the next 2 years cycle. And we're sitting on $2 billion in a rainy day fund that...
Which they say they're not going to spend.
Not going to spend as part of the budget process. They're not going to use that to say, okay, we'll take $1 billion out of the rainy day fund to pay for this in this next 2-year budget. What Kasich's point is, look, you know, halfway through the next biennium, if we need to tap into that, that's when you do it. You tap into it mid-year to put out fires, not to plan your budget moving forward.
Okay. All right, Loretta, thanks for that call. We are in the midst of our weekly reporter roundtable. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly Reporters Roundtable. Still with us, Ohio State House reporter for Gatehouse Media, Mark Kovac, and also the Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer, Chrissy Thompson. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. A couple things. One being getting back to the Medicaid issue and the Medicaid expansion. Are Republican lawmakers going to go to the mat over this with the governor? There's signals that they might, and that which means he'll have to go back to the controlling board and go around them again if he can achieve even that. What about it, Mark Kovac?
Well, I mean, if something happens at the federal level, there's not going to be that money there. I mean, I think that's abundantly clear from the administration and lawmakers. I'm not sure on the mechanics of the Medicaid spending. Have you covered that as far as, you know, do they have to go back and re-up that again?
So the way that it is right now, and the lawmakers in the past have kind of washed their hands of it to say, like, this isn't our problem. It is basically set up so that the administration has the authority to say who is covered under Medicaid. And so they basically say, well, the administration expanded Medicaid. And okay, so now we just pay for everybody under Medicaid according to these principles we can set in place about, like, what reimbursement rates are for doctors and stuff. So you are hearing them talk about it. They certainly could put something in that would limit the administration's authority. They sort of talked about doing that with some things, trying to get them to go through the to the controlling board, which is a separate board that has kind of final say on approving big amounts of spending that have already gone through law, basically. You have to go back one more time. It's kind of like an extra check and balance. So they talked about doing that, for instance, in the transportation budget. The issue is that all of these things are in budgets, and Kasich has line item veto in budgets. So you think Kasich is going to let them limit his authority to expand Medicaid? No, he's not. So
as long as it's in the budget.
Right. So they could try a veto override. I don't think they have the, like, there are plenty of Republicans who like Medicaid expansion. Not a ton, but enough that they wouldn't be able to get a veto override. So I don't really see it happening. And when you ask, like, we asked them about it at the State of the State, and they basically said it was like water under the bridge or toothpaste out of the tube, I think, is okay. What Speaker Cliff Rosenberger said. Yeah, so you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, as anyone with a toddler knows. So, they're left to scrape the toothpaste into a cup and decide how to use it most efficiently.
The governor proposed moving the Bureau of Children with Medical Handicaps program from the Department of Health to the Department of Medicaid. And cut household income, more importantly, I guess, cut household income eligibility limits to address an $11 million shortfall. House Republicans said absolutely not, that they plan to scrap that proposal. Is this one of those things that might not go away if they're facing that kind of a shortfall, Mark Kovac?
Oh, I don't think any lawmaker in their right mind is going to do anything to affect handicapped children.
Right.
I mean, that's just not going to happen. So that was pretty evident from the start that that was going to come out of the budget. It's significant that they had a press conference was that 2 weeks ago now? How early they had the press conference
right.
on that to say, hey, first
right
of all, everybody,
bat.
You know, we don't even need to have a press conference on the fracking tax, but, you know, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to study that issue outside of the budget. That's kind of the go-to position of lawmakers at times. We'll study that outside of the budget.
When no one's paying attention.
Nothing will happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they did that with the frack tax a couple of years ago, remember? Right. And they said they were going to have a solution by October 1st or something.
And they
then
did.
There was never solution. No, they
Well,
they decided
not to do any.
They were late with their solution, and then they just said, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And they're doing kind of the same thing, although I get a different vibe on the unemployment compensation reform thing that they're working on.
How
with
so?
Labor and business groups, because they came out and said, we're going to have a solution to that by April, if you recall. Mm-hmm. Well, we're in April, and they're still working behind the scenes to try to figure that out. I talked to Representative Schering, who's the guy who's kind of doing the spearheading behind the scenes on that. He seems to think that they can come up with something before summer.
Okay.
So that still seems to be moving along. They're going to have to address, you know, $11 million shortfalls, obviously. And so maybe they'll have to do something, if for no other reason than to ensure that the medically handicapped children continue to get their services. But yeah, that wasn't staying in. I mean, you could put money on that early on that was coming out.
So I think there's a really interesting dynamic going on right now. I mean, the only thing that Kasich and the Republicans honestly seem to agree on is that, we don't have as much money as we thought we did. I mean, it was kind of – I think it was telling that they did a press conference together last week on this issue, at least to put a front of some kind of unity up there, because they don't agree on – I'm having trouble coming up with things that they do agree on that's
right.
in the budget. They don't agree on how to fund
schools.
So what's
the tactical advantage of having a unified press conference?
I think it just basically shows that I think it's basically the tax cut. Like, we're just not going to do the tax cut, and we're not going to bash each other about it. Although Kasich did talk on and on about how the income tax should be lower. It's just not going to be this year. Sorry.
Hmm.
So I think that's why they did it. But, They're not eye to eye on most things.
But you have to keep in mind, I suppose, it comes into play is that you have the budget director coming up with his projections, and then you have Legislative Service Commission coming up with its projections. And at times, those are kind of out of whack. I mean, there are times in the past where you come to June and the budget director will come in, but then LSC will have some estimates that maybe are a little rosier, and so lawmakers pump a little more money into schools or something. So it could be that, hey, yeah, we're in agreement here that, I mean, the LSC and the OBM estimates this time around seem to be a little closer, and the fact that they're all together probably means, yeah, we probably do need to cut $800 million from the budget, you know, I mean, the coming budget. I guess we're in agreement on that issue at this point. So, I mean, that could be part of it.
Chrissy, first of all, listeners, you are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. Chrissy Thompson, last week, the governor said that he's fed up with both political parties. He told the Inquirer, I can't even tell you what the Republicans exactly stand for. I know he's pitching his new book. What else is he talking about?
This is a man who is conflicted about his future, I think. He'll tell you seven times in a row he's not going to run for president.
Next thing you know, he's popping up in New Hampshire.
And honestly, so a Washington Post reviewer was tweeting some photos that he'd taken of pages of the book. I guess if you're a reviewer, it's not on embargo or something. This is kind of like, wait, how's this book getting out here? Anyway, the last page is a letter to Kasich's daughters who haven't voted in an election yet. They're 17, almost 18. And he's like, so your first presidential election will be in 2020. And I just hope, girls, that there's a candidate running that you feel good voting for. So you could interpret that, I suppose, as like, you know, hopefully the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, who I really don't like, becomes a different person. Or you could interpret it as, wouldn't you love to vote for me, girls? So, you know, he keeps doing stuff like this. And this comment that he made to us saying that he did later say that he didn't know what the Democrats stood for because he hears that they are being obstructionist. And that, boy, won't it be great when he's no longer the governor and he can say whatever the heck he wants. And so kind of it sort of sounds like he wants to be an independent. But I don't, like, that's again, that's Is that a politically viable future? Does he have a politically viable
future? Since when has he not said what he wants?
Well, he kind of, that's the other thing is that my editor, Peter Badia, said like, oh, we look forward to that. And he was like, well, it's not going to be much different than this.
I'm trying to figure out what it would what he would say differently. I mean, he just went up against.
He says he's trying to be more responsible right now.
Huh. Thoughts, Mark Kovac?
He sounds a lot like he did before he ran for president the last time when we was in Ed Boards and we'd ask him and, oh, I have no interest in that. And everybody knew he was running it. I mean, but he still was saying those things. It's still, I mean, just regular people I talk to in the community, they all assume he's running for president again. I mean, that's just what they say.
But he's running from a state with a party controlled now by Donald Trump supporters.
Well, that's the thing. And he's like speaking out against his own party. So what John Kasich's going to run as not a Republican. Like, I mean, I know a lot of Democrats like him, but I think they would rather have a Democrat. And Republicans would rather have like a real Republican. I mean.
Whatever that is.
Someone who maybe doesn't. Maybe Republicans are really annoyed that Kasich disagrees so openly with Donald Trump still. Mm-hmm. And is publishing this book, which is basically. It's called Two Paths. One of them is the Donald Trump path and the other one is the John Kasich path. Like, hello, it's going to position him as a long-term critic. So that's really annoying to Republicans. And I think Kasich knows that. I think that's why he keeps saying he's not going to run. But I think it's really bothering him. Like, he's just still toying with, could I be a national leader and, gosh, maybe even president, you know? I think. So I think that's kind of what we heard from him. But we also could be hearing the beginning of he basically predicted the downfall of the party system. Like he said that the parties were going to erode.
Well,
so we would have the I don't know.
He's not the first to that party. No pun intended. lots of people have said that. Let's turn to a more upcoming, more imminent election cycle. And that's for the U.S. Senate in 2018. Julie Carr-Smyth of the Associated Press reported that a super PAC called the Ohio Freedom Fund, created to back Republican Treasurer Josh Mandel's 2018 U.S. Senate campaign, is getting most of its money from an advocacy group not required to disclose its donors. What's going on there? Mark Kovac?
It's Josh Mandel. I mean,
dark money?
Dark money. Isn't that all part of the approach there?
Doesn't have to be dark money.
This is
money,
an unusual situation just in that for a group that can disclose donors to get all of its money from a group that doesn't disclose donors, like it's just kind of passing the money around. And it seems to be some critics of this process are saying that it's a way to get around FEC violations. It could call into question some of that. We all know that the FEC is totally deadlocked and they won't do a daggone thing about this. So it's a tough situation. But this is not a traditional way of funding a PAC. So Typically we do – PACs don't have contribution limits, but at least we get to see who gives them the money.
Right.
So, so it seems to be a way to get around that rule.
Has Josh Mandel's campaign responded to this? Of course, it's not associated with his campaign. It's just a PAC, super PAC created to support him, but not in conjunction with them.
I'm not sure if they responded, but they're generally not really allowed to even. So it kind of gives them a pass on that. I mean, that's the thing, right? The PAC system and the dark money system gives folks a pass on this stuff. I mean, Josh Mandel knows the guy who runs the PAC. It's like it's one of his longtime aides and allies, you
right.
know. And the
they never talk about it though.
So, I mean, the thing that I know best is the Kasich world, right? The PAC and the campaign were one and the same until the night before the man launched his campaign. So, do you think they had long discussions about what you'll be doing and what I'll be doing? Like, of course they did. But then the minute that you launch a campaign, they have to divorce and not coordinate anymore. But they, of course, know they have a plan. They've all communicated it with each other, you know? And I'm sure this is the same situation with the Mandel campaign.
Now, on the other side of the coin, what do we know about Sherrod Brown? They're both going to raise a ton of money. no matter what.
But this was the highest, wasn't this the highest last dollar time. Race last time? What was it? What was the number behind this race?
I can't remember.
It was a huge amount. It was a huge amount of money that they poured into it last time, and I would think even more would be going into it just given the climate that we have right now and how much Josh Mandel wants to win that seat if he is ultimately the nominee. I mean, there's still some other names floating around, I suppose, in that race.
I don't think the other name floating around is Pat Tiberi, but it doesn't really look like he's going to run. So,
yeah, why not? I mean,
he just hasn't. He's speaking at Lincoln Day dinners and that sort of thing, but he hasn't really taken, he hasn't been having the press conferences and the, you know, speaking tours and being on television and all these things that someone would need to do to start kind of moving toward a primary against Josh Mandel, who's obviously actively running and who has actively run before, and who has an unbelievable ability to raise money. So I just don't, Pat Tiberi does not have the name recognition statewide that Mandel has, honestly. Mandel, yeah, he's just state treasurer, but you know, he's run successfully statewide twice. He had that Senate race, and right. he has the ability, he has in some ways better name recognition than some of the other statewide Republicans, and has the ability to rally a crowd better than almost any of them. He's a really good campaigner. So it's a super formidable race, or formidable challenge to have a primary against him. I don't think that Tiberi is going to do it.
All right. We will continue with our weekly reporters roundtable. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. If you have questions or comments, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Still with us, Mark Kovac, Ohio State House reporter for Gatehouse Media, and also Chrissy Thompson, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Inquirer. The class of 2018 is the first to undergo the new high school graduation requirements passed by the General Assembly 3 years ago. They're predicting, or apparently three out of every 10 Ohio high school student in that class wouldn't not pass. What are they doing to manage this rebound, Mark Kovac?
Oh, I guess they're looking at loosening the standards. That's something I didn't cover last week. It's something that has me scratching my head just as a parent. And I mean, not that my kids are super smart or anything, but I mean, my oldest is in this process. He's a sophomore. You need 18 of these test points, I guess, to graduate. He still has one of the tests to take, and he already has 27. I mean, I don't understand what the – I mean, are our schools in that bad a shape that kids –
districts, they do struggle, right? I mean, it tends to be the low wealth or very rural.
Urban? You're not going to?
Charter.
Charters
are struggling with that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Kasich said something in his State of the State that was, I don't think probably anyone clapped at this, but basically said something like, does anyone disagree with me that our schools, like our schools are not preparing our kids well? And that's so controversial to be, because we're all supposed to be pro schools and pro teacher, but there are some parts of the state that are struggling, and so when you put in these you put on these requirements, it's an accountability measure. We also have kids' lives at stake, right? And families that need their kids to start working, kids that need a graduate. I mean, you just need a high school degree to do a lot of the jobs that these kids are going to do. You know, so. That it seems to be right now that we're going to give some folks a pass and hope that we can do better soon with their, you know.
It's just, I mean, it's shifting.
Them.
You know, they had, I think originally, you know, you've got to meet these kinds of scores in order to graduate. And we had the end of the Ohio graduation test or whatever at the time. And then lawmakers shifted and said, okay, well, here's a couple of paths for you to take. You can, you know, do these end of course exams and this kind of thing. And now they're taking another shift to provide another option, essentially. I think it's a three-path type. You know, you can do your college entrance exams, you can do your end of course exams, or you can do some kind of career readiness type thing, which is the which is what Christy's talking about with the governor, you know, who's big on, you know, our schools aren't doing enough to get our kids ready for the jobs that are available and the companies want in the state. And that's where things like teachers completing externships at businesses and things come into the picture.
That's not going to happen.
By the way, is that still in the...
It won't be in about a week.
Both sides have said they will not have it in the budget. So I have a colleague who told me that he thought that we should just put a headlight on that. Just write the three paragraphs and say, no, this won't be in the budget. I was like, but I've said that in stories. He's like, it still needs to be a headline. It's coming soon to Cincinnati.com.
No. Yeah.
I mean, the point is, okay, some kids are going to college and they're not going to have any problems with some of these testing type things. Some kids are going into careers, you know, and, you know, heavy blue collar type jobs. And, you know, that's not the way to determine, you know, these kinds of court tests aren't the way to determine whether they're ready for graduation and moving forward in life. And I think that's kind of the struggle or whatever that goes on in figuring out how to gauge whether our schools are actually, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing with their kids.
And we're in the middle of a catch-22 with this situation because we got to get these kids – the test's supposed to be testing whether the students are learning. But we have to get them to pass the test in order to show that they've learned something and graduate. And as the deadline for graduation approaches, it's panic session to try to learn how to take a test, which isn't what the system was designed to do in the first place.
Well, I mean, they've been taking these tests, though. These tests are at every level growing. I mean, they all know how to take a test, don't they, by the time they're sophomore in high school? My gosh, I mean, the whole proficiency thing doesn't start, you know, when you're a sophomore in high school.
I'm just saying that they... I think the enrichment or learning for the sake of learning goes totally out the window to the point that it's like this standard is on the test and you keep missing these three questions. So you got to pass this test, better learn this standard, you know, type of a thing, which perhaps that's not the kind of instruction that gets the child ready for success out in the workplace.
When I was a senior in high school 150 years ago, for my government class, the teacher gave us the test the first day of class.
Oh, that's nice. And then if you could just pass it, boom, done.
Well, this is what you need to know by the end of the year. Now we're going to spend the whole rest of the year
learning.
I was when I did a stint as a teaching assistant in a college history class, the professor would give me the test and I was in charge of doing a study session and I would go in with the test and there were 20 questions on the test and I would say, here's 20 things you probably want to know, you know. Yeah. You want to know the year of this war. You want to know this. You want to know – half the class would still flunk.
Yeah.
Even after going in and telling them, 20-question test, 20 things you should know, you know. And so
– Well, I was the type to put little stars next – when they would say something in note-taking, I would put a star next to it.
I am, like, cringing right
now. Or even
in
why?
College media law.
Because we're not normal.
Well, no. Oh, I mean, I studied like a very nerdy person. I mean, I'm just saying that my husband's a college professor. I have a master's in higher ed administration focusing on student development. Some of this, like, it's just killing me. This is not the point of college, anyone who wonders.
But it gets over with and then you can kind of think about things.
My college media law class, which was heavy on case stuff, the teacher at the first day of class would say, hey, look, here's the final exam. I'm going to take it down to the library. You can go down and check it out. And he's like, and you know what? Half of you are still going to flunk this test, even though here's the test with the answers.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. And even then, yeah.
So perhaps the moral is that this has been an issue for years.
Long time.
Yeah.
Which makes you just, I don't know. What are they talking about? The lawmakers, more proficiency testing over and over and over again. Don't they have these same conversations?
They do.
And I think that's why they're looking at different ways to gauge what kids know.
Yeah, their job is to do the tests, right? Their job is to do accountability. So that's... it's a hard thing to just say, like, well, teachers teach better and let's drop some of these tests.
So state education leaders were scrambling to make changes so that more students would be able to graduate. I mean, what are they going to tweak at this point in the game?
They basically have told the legislature to make the tweaks. So more students will graduate. So we're still waiting for an actual answer on what they will tweak. But
these are the recommendations. I mean, lawmakers still have to pick it up and run with it and
hurry. They have to hurry, though.
That can be a slow-moving ship at times.
I mean, they've got a lot of issues to deal with.
They are in agreement on, I mean, the lawmakers will do it. It's not like the state board could have made some changes themselves and decided to do it this other way. So they made that decision last week. This shouldn't take too long. So
I don't know. I mean, you start talking about testing and there's some crowds that form down at the state house and that kind of thing.
I mean, it's April. We've got to get going here.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we've been saying that about lately. By the way, it's all over and done with, right? The Dakota Access Pipeline is opened up, but the state did send Highway Patrol there to help out with security or something. Governor Kasich has said, yeah, I authorized it, but what won't they tell us? Chrissy Thompson.
Yeah, the reason this was news, Kasich told us this in an interview last week at the Inquirer, and the reason this is news is because the administration, we found out that the troopers went up there, so these are state Highway Patrol officers. But the administration won't tell us who went, what they were doing, who was in charge of it, et cetera, because the officers were undercover and providing security in a situation that could, quote, prevent or respond to acts of terrorism. So we at the Inquirer and also the Columbus Dispatch has also sued for – no, actually, maybe we're the only ones who sued, but the Dispatch also has requested and had these things been denied. Anyway, we are in some sort of dispute with the state, and it's like at a stalemate, and so a special master is going to decide what to do with this.
Why wouldn't the state want to tell media and / the taxpayers what they're doing on that score? They're saying they can't?
Well, they say they can't, or that they're allowed to not, because it will jeopardize the security operations that the officers conduct in the future, I think, is more their argument now. That, you know, this is how our officers work undercover in terrorist the fact that they're saying this is terrorism is it's super controversial, right? So why don't they want to talk about it? Probably just because it's controversial. Like, they certainly – state law doesn't prohibit them from giving us this information. They just think that they found a part of state law that says that they don't have to give the information. So there is some leeway in state law when it comes to security. If information that is distributed to the public would violate the security of someone that's supposed to be protected by the state and or the security of officers, then there is some leeway. But the Inquirer's tack is that this is over and done with, and this is not
over.
We're not violating anybody's security here. Like, give us the records, please.
Yes. And so these records, it's about what they did or how much money they spent or what?
So North Dakota reimbursed us. We found out because North Dakota gave us paperwork on the Ohio troopers, which was nice of them. Thank you, North Dakota. We just called and got it. It was kind of hilarious. But we would like the contract with North Dakota to get more information about what the officers were supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And we would like to know who were the troopers who were deployed. So that's what we've been seeking all along. We've been kind of here and there making progress. The dispatch found out that the officers had used force against protesters. There's use of force records that have to be filed if an officer uses force. And so they found that out. There have been little bits and pieces of information. But again, Kasich was just like, yeah, I authorized the troopers. And we kind of stared at him. The ed board did. So that's like several editors and usually a couple reporters who are there to help if there's news made. And I said, okay, can you tell us a little bit about that? And Kasich didn't seem to know that this was news to us. Didn't realize that this was such a big deal that his administration has been going back and forth and lawsuits have been filed and that sort of thing. So.
Okay. What else is going on this week? Easter's out of the way. Are they back from spring break?
This is the calm before the storm. They're not back from spring break until next week. We may start hearing a little more about what's going on with the budget, but I would expect the big unveil on that next week. And
maybe even the week after. Honestly, they were talking at the end of last week like it may not be on time.
Well, the vote will come the week after. I think they're talking about a vote the first week of May.
Okay.
Ryan Smith, the chairman of the finance committee, told us late last week that he was looking at the 24th or 25th for a – and Cliff Rosenberger, the House Speaker, said that they were planning some kind of press event to tell us what's in it. So I would expect to hear something more about what's going on with the budget next week. But there won't be a vote until May, and that pushes everything back. I mean, because the Senate's already started its hearings, and they've got to finish up by the end of June.
I mean, what they have essentially, the Republicans who deal with this sort of budget sort of document, is they have this week without much going on up here to try to figure it out, because they've now been given a number and basically told, yes, it's low. Figure out what to cut.
Yeah.
so they've got to take a couple percentage points worth of spending out of the budget this week. So that's what they'll be doing.
Now, local government officials are concerned that they could slash more and shift more of the onus of this onto their backs, right?
I think that's a given. When you talk about things like moving convicted residents from state prison to local community control or local community treatment.
Without
adequate support to pay for all those things. I mean, I talked about to someone over the weekend in a rural area who said, I don't like Kasich. He keeps doing this to us. I think you're going to see more things like that, where locals will be picking up more of the costs compared to the state, I guess.
It's tough, though, because this isn't this is an interesting process, because this isn't a Kasich idea. Right now, we're going to that one is that Mark just talked about. But I'm just generally saying the new cuts that we're going to see are going to have to be from Republican lawmakers who in the past have kind of been the good guys. Kasich has proposed he has this whatever, you can be mad at me. I have this bold idea and the lawmakers will probably change it. So, you know, so they've kind of restored things. They usually have been the ones who have found that there's been better state tax revenue reports, so that have shown them later in the process you have more money to spend or to push through a tax cut. They're going to be the ones who have to kind of come up with the hard stuff to cut. Also, while having promised to send more money for drug treatment, you know, and kind of alluded to the fact that they don't want to cut money from schools, you know, that kind of thing. I have been wondering all along where they're going to find this money. And I think the answer right now is that there isn't any more money to find. So they're actually going to have to make some of these hard decisions themselves, which we haven't seen them do in the past.
Right. Right. That's an interesting dynamic. In the meantime, so this is a time when you guys are working on stuff you don't want to talk about then.
Secret stuff.
Well, you know what we have coming up is, I believe next week, Donald Trump will hit his 100th day in office. So I think it's late next week.
Oh, joy.
So yeah. So I don't mind saying that. I mean, I've been working on stuff related to that. And I know that probably a lot of my colleagues around the state have as well. So that's something that I think the whole country will be talking about.
So much has happened. It seems like longer than 100 days.
It's very
busy. Next week.
It's very, very busy. A little tumultuous.
North Korea.
Yeah, I mean, golly, I went out to one of the places that I've been doing a lot of my reporting. I did it before Trump came in office, and I went back, as Monroe County.
Yeah.
So that saw the biggest increase in from Romney's percentage to Trump's percentage, and the congressional district saw the biggest increase in the country from Romney to Trump. It's a traditionally working class Democrats, and that really were behind Trump. So I went out there on Thursday, and on my way home, all of the North Korea stuff started breaking. And I had talked about it all day with people, and I can't use any of that stuff anymore.
Because there's something new to talk about.
Right? You know, so we waited till the last minute so we would be able to talk to folks about what really has happened in the 100 days. And I needed to
Things
do the
change.
Reporting on the 99th day.
Who knows what will happen this week, right?
Things change. Yeah. Well, Chrissy Thompson, thanks for joining us today to talk about what we do know right now, today.
Thank you.
It's Chrissy Thompson, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. Also, Mark Kovac, Ohio State House reporter for Gatehouse Media. Thanks, Mark, for joining us.
Have a good week.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.